Hello, friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hello, Levi.
Hello, Jen.
Sup?
Today, we are talking about the Sahagin tribe quests.
Fish people. They're fish people.
Correct. They are fish people.
Yeah.
Very good. Like most of the A Realm Reborn tribe quests, the Sahagin are for disciples of war and disciples of magic. No crafting and or gathering involved. And we already hit on all of the tribe quest generalities in previous episodes about the beast tribe system. So let's just get down to it, Jen.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get our lead from Maelstrom Command and Limsa Lominsa. This is Storm Commander Rashat Riki, who informs us that raiders have sunk a civilian vessel in the Strait of Marathor. She's used to pirates attacking and looting ships, sure, but to completely sink one, this is near unheard of. No, she suspects the Sahagin and their thralls, the Serpent Reavers. So a Maelstrom warship will be patrolling the waters looking for these culprits, but Rashat asks us to scour the shores for survivors. And a private Willfalk has already been deployed, and we will rendezvous with him.
He is in Costa del Sol. This is where shit went down.
Yep.
Yeah.
This guy is a Rogadin marauder with a metal skullcap, looking pretty generic.
Yep. So he's on the beach tending to the few survivors that exist currently, including a woman crying for her missing son. Sad. So he can't wrap his head around anybody doing this, even the Sahagin. I mean, this was a civilian ship. This was not a Maelstrom vessel. This was not Bloody Executioner. Like, it wasn't even like other Sahagin. Like, you know, what is happening?
Willfalk tells us that there aren't that many survivors that need helping because most are lost at sea. He gives us some medical supplies and tells us to get to work assisting those who can be helped.
Right.
There are two wounded survivors and two injured survivors, Jen. It's a very important distinction.
Indeed.
No children, though. No missing child.
No kids. No sign of child.
And Willfalk is in the middle of giving this woman a form condolence speech. Dear so-and-so, we regret to inform you that your child is lost at sea. Like, he's not being very tactful whatsoever in breaking the news to her that we did not find her child amongst the four survivors on the beach. But at this point, though, he cries out, Leviathan's scaly arse.
A group of Sahagin have emerged from the water and they're approaching us on the shore. This seems bad. They've come to finish the job, apparently. And before Willfalk can rally the troops, the leader of this small group of Sahagin, because he's got the shit, he's got the headdress, he's got the stuff.
He's got
apparent leader.
A gold faceplate and has lavender scales with red fins.
And he's got this like cockatoo looking triplicate fin thing coming out of his head. It's very distinct. This guy signals to his comrades, and they bring forth a small boat with a child inside.
A lively lad, Jen.
A lively lad. It is Robin, with a Y, the son of the quote-unquote bedraggled woman. That doesn't seem fair. Should be like concerned mother or, you know, no.
It can be both, Jen.
Bedraggled ass, drowned rat ass, lady. So the kid seems untouched and he's generally in a great mood. Mom and son reunited, weird circumstances. The lead Sahagin guy signals for all of them to just go back to sea and they swim away. No words are exchanged. That's it. And we're like, what is happening? So the kid confirms that he is fine. He was in the process of drowning when the nice fishmen rescued him. How nice. Inside the little boat that they used to bring him to shore, he found a necklace, which he thinks belongs to one of them. And he wants to make sure that they get it back. That's, you know, that's the way that goes. And we're like, yeah, we can do that. Let's see how this turns out.
We head into the Sahagin territory in western Lanosha now to look for these mysterious saviors. This is the Sahagin spawning grounds at the upper end of western Lanosha, which is sealed off by a pair of stone walls set into the sea cliffs. These are the north and south tide gates. Beyond the tide gates, there is the full-on Sahagin territory. This place is seemingly terraformed to be kind of like underwater, even though it's actually above ground. There are anemones and corals and urchins and all sorts of bioluminescent sea life that are growing on the ground here just beyond the tide gates. This area was a former Limson settlement, but Leviathan obliterated the area with a tidal wave, and the Sahagin moved in to claim it as theirs. This whole place functions effectively like an outdoor dungeon, from the entrance, which is guarded by Sahagin siege equipment, to the tunnels beyond, and on the far coast is that raw aetherite that they used to summon Leviathan. There's also a Limson-style stone fortress deep within the area. This is the Serpent's Tongue, which is the base for the Leviathan-tempered Serpent Reaver Pirates. You can do a handful of side quests out here too, which is in support of the two tide gates. The defenders are led by a pair of brothers with some serious sibling rivalry, to the point that they're paranoid that the other gate is getting more support than theirs. So there's a quest where each brother wants you to kill sea wasps. The north brother wants the sea wasp umbrellas to feed their men, whereas the south brother wants you to kill them and ruin the umbrellas so you can spite his brother's appetite. Classy arrangement.
I mean, one of those gates is very clearly like hella out of the way and smaller. And yeah, so if you've got like sibling baggage and one of you is stationed at one and the other is stationed at another, that's only going to exacerbate things. Get those guys reassigned.
Which, I mean, I agree with that for sure, but which gate do you think is more out of the way than the other?
The one to the east.
There's a north and south. There's no east.
So when you're going up, you're going, I would assume north from Aleport, right? Up to Skull Valley. That's north, right?
Northwest.
Yeah. So there's like the big fat one you fly over every single time to do these quests. And then there's the one that's way over there that's like half the size that nobody uses.
Wow. So rude, Jen.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're both the same. The gates are very different. So feelings of inadequacy.
Both are needed, Jen, to protect the rest of Middle Lanosha.
Bring that up in sibling therapy or whatever between the two.
I will pass on that.
Both are equally important.
They are, but I'm not going to be the one who's going to spearhead this effort.
Yeah, but that's funny that that's a quest.
Yes. Anyway, though, we are not here for them. We are here for those strange Sahagin. So we will ride, walk, and or fly over the South Tide Gate to reach this little spawning ground on the far edge of the coastline. This is like the far southern edge of the spawning ground. This is a little dinky village type place, which has a pair of huts with clamshell and coral rooftops. And we talk to the spawnling that watches over the rickety wooden gate into this area.
Yeah, so we're immediately threatened. That's fine. You know, we are a shore walker after all. So we're threatened with a triton for trespassing, and we show them the shark tooth necklace that we have that we want to try to give back. And the guard backs down because this necklace belongs to the clutch father, Nov. So now we're allowed to go in. But we need to be respectful. Nov is the elder of the clan. Don't do anything stupid. I'm watching you. Blah, blah, blah. So Nov he's surprised to see us. It's not like, you know, humans are running around or whatever here ever. Yeah, I wrote, Nov is surprised to see us as apparently, quote unquote, shorewalkers are mostly dicks. He did not save the child for a particular reason, only that children are precious. So, and to back that statement up, he's like, I know how precious they are because my entire clan is bound by my blood. So these are like all of his kids.
Almost as precious as his children is that necklace, which we have brought back, which was a gift from the Sahagin matriarch.
Yeah, with whom he has had all these children.
Well, I wouldn't say that. They don't, quote, have children together. The matriarch gives them eggs, and then he fertilizes
you
them.
Have these eggs, do with them what you will. You'll probably fertilize them. Have at it.
Have at it. I think that, quote, having children with implies more intimacy than is.
No, she's, yeah, this is nature.
It's nature, baby.
So he's really stoked that we brought his gift back. He considers a banquet, but questions if our Sherwalker stomach could handle it. You know, that's fair. Probably a lot of raw fish going around.
Which is not bad.
Which is delicious, but I mean, I'm like a literal fish on a rock. Eat it. Like, well, if you could slice it up or grill it or something. I don't know. They do prepare some of their food. Let's be real.
We got a stew later on. Spoilers.
There's a lot of prepared foods that they enjoy. So,
but we ask him about the attack on the civilian vessel, and Clutch Father Nov says, yes, the attack was a Sahagin attack perpetrated by the Coral Tridents, a volatile and fanatical faction. Each clan of Clutchmates is led by a single Clutch Father, and the Indigo Matriarch, akin to a queen, bestows her eggs only to the bravest and most seasoned warriors. Then the Clutch Father instructs his young in the way of their people. And they need these spawning grounds, he says, to continue their life cycle. Unfortunately, the spawning grounds are beset by conflict, which is perpetuated by Lumsens and Sahagin both.
But he barely finishes this sentence when a youngster, Sue, it's spelled S-E-E-W-W, so like so, runs up needing the Clutch Father's immediate counsel. A younger spawnling, Pew, has availed himself of the task of talking sense into the Coral Tridents. And I was like, can you go save my son, please?
He says, his brain is as soft as his spawnling scales. But Nov can't leave the other young to deal with this. He has to stay and guard the nursery. So he asks us to intervene. Will we save Pew? So we head out, and we find him not too far away from the North Tide Gate, which Jin hates, already surrounded by trident-wielding Coral Trident Sahagin, which is an apt name, apparently. And we intervene just in time. We kill the tridents, and Pew realizes why we've come. He says that he just came here to try to put the Clutch Father's teachings into practice. But now he's going to get punished plus the beating he just received. So now he's double punished.
Yeah, this whole thing has kind of left him a little disillusioned because he's being brought up with a certain set of values by Nov, and the Coral Tridents are super not at all about that. And yeah, so he's had to come to terms with, oh, this isn't real life. We go back to the nursery, and Nov confirms that Pew will be disciplined. And now, more than ever, his people have to act with caution and awareness because their population is in decline. Their life cycle requires that they find spawning grounds on land in which to lay their eggs, but that endeavor is becoming more and more dangerous. Their traditional spawning grounds were destroyed, like so many things in the Calamity, and their search for a safe place to raise their young is seen by the Eorzeans as an invasion, but they're just trying to survive. And the Coral Tridents, by comparison, are determined to engage with violence, controlling those weak of mind like the Reavers. And he says, but conflict with your peoples is not the answer to our woes. We must look beyond the present and ensure calmer waters, waters in which the future of our race can thrive. And maybe we will be the first rock in the bridge built between our peoples and the blunting stone of the Coral Trident's mindless spears.
So Nov now asks us to help him. I mean, it's kind of ambiguous what he's looking for. He wants us to be, he's essentially intermediary between us.
Yeah. Well,
yes and no. He says that, that's how it's framed, is that he wants us to be a party that will advocate for the Sahagin to the Limps and people to try to get a dialogue going. But that's nothing to do with what we actually end up doing in just a minute. So, I mean, what we're really doing here is we're just going to fight Coral Tridents on his behalf a bunch, and we're not doing any actual Lumsden outreach. So it's kind of confused as to what it wants. This whole quest is about thematically about trying to break cycles of violence. And it's trying to say, hey, you know, this is not working. We're not going to get anywhere if we keep fighting each other. We need to find a way to stop this cycle and to try something else to cohabitate. But the things that we do, you know, it's partially because it's a video game and we have one verb really as the Warrior of Light, which is to kill stuff. But that is all we do. We just like fight guys and click a few things and fight guys after clicking things.
Yeah, the shit that we're doing is basically just like cleanup. It's reactionary. And it's not, there are some things that are considered, I guess, proactive in trying to keep the Coral Tridents from escalating shit. So if they like hire a bunch of healers, go kill all of their healers.
Yeah, but it's, again, we are perpetuating this own cycle of violence. This is literally an issue with the quest format. The actions that we're about to undertake in the tribe quests, in the daily tribe quests, they are directly contradictory to Nov's words. And maybe you can make the argument, sure, that with the Coral Tridents being the dominant faction, the violent faction here, we need to, quote, blunt them, as he put it. Because if they're trying to stir shit up with the Limpsons, then we're not going to get anywhere with the Limpsons because Limpson doesn't see any sort of granularity in the Sahagin groups. They just see fish people. And they're like, Sahagin bad, we kill Sahagin. That's it. And if the Coral Tridents are trying to attack the Lumsdens, then they're just going to assume that every Sahagin is on the offensive right now. So you can make an argument that, sure, we need to deal with them, and they're not going to listen to reason, so maybe violence might be an answer to the Coral Tridents. But the point being, though, is that however you want to frame it, we are still engaging in a cycle of violence.
Yeah, we're not progressing anything. We're not making inroads to diplomacy. We're not really doing anything. And that, I mean, that's just, you know, that's the nature of the mechanics of the tribe quests, is that you're going to need like a bunch of shit to do. And so it's the same shit over and over again. So I'm like, how many more creates of weapons do I need to burn?
I would argue that some of the later tribe quests actually do a lot better in terms of having non-violent activities to do. Everything here, I have an issue in general with the daily tribe quest format. It is ultimately a task to encourage you to log on daily and do something in the game. That is not especially interesting. The interesting parts are on the rank up quests. The daily stuff is pretty monotonous overall. But either way, though, there are non-violent daily quests in other tribe quests. It's just that the Sahagin one especially is particularly violent. Like everything, even the ones that don't have us necessarily going out to kill things, still ends up with us killing things.
Yep. I don't think we've ever, like with the kobolds, we're like, we're just like one of their little lackeys. It's the same shit. You know, it's just ARR Beast Tribe stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the best example, even though it is long as shit, is the Ixal quest, where we're doing a lot of stuff that's not violent in that one. Some of them do require us to engage in offensive actions, or some put us in danger while we're doing other tasks. But in general, the Ixal are not trying necessarily to fight anyone. They're trying to build their airship. Maybe violence happens by necessity, and it can be like literal necessity. Like you're trying to, for instance, you know, harvest these materials and there are Ixal or Dullahans or whatever in the area, but you're not trying to fight these guys. You're trying to get materials to help build this airship. I agree overall, Jin, that especially for ARR, the Disciples of War / Magic quests, they are hella violent.
Yeah. So, I mean, the overall theme of these things is to try to knock the Coral Tridents down some pegs. That's it. Or feed the nursery. You know.
What's interesting about these ones, though, that's unique to the Sahagin, at least as far as the A Realm Reborn quests go, are the Elbst quests, where the quest takes place on a distant island, and we have to ride an Elbst, which is like a lizard wolf, like an aquatic lizard wolf, essentially. It looks kind of like a dinosaur with like a big, long, toothy mouth.
I was going to say, there's definitely going to be a dinosaur that looks like this thing.
But either way, though, we ride this Elbst out to these distant islands and do stuff there, or we ride it to like a ship on the sea and do stuff there. This has like these little subzones that are still on the Middle Lanotia map, but you can't get there except by Elbst. Like if you try to fly off those boats, for instance, you hit an invisible wall you cannot get to and from them by conventional means. You must ride the Elbstout there.
Which is very frustrating because there are two ships side by side and you will take the Elbst, do one mission, and you'll look out over and be like, oh, hey, there's my other set of quests right across the way. If I could just jump between ships, I could just handle it. You cannot. You have to go back to the nursery, get back on an Elbst, go back out to the other ship. It's like, why are you showing me this? Why couldn't you have put this ship somewhere else where I can't see it?
It's a bit clumsy to put all of the quest ships like side by side by side.
I know. It's like we're in some weird, you know, the staging area for a parade. Like, we're not supposed to see this.
Ship crisis zone.
It's very, yeah, it was such a weird decision. And it was really annoying because you couldn't just go from one to the other.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, but it's still like, why? Don't put it in a different instance. Like, I don't want to see it. I don't want
to
see it.
Or elsewhere in the sea or something. So you're not right next door to the other ship. But anyway. Then there is Moonshade Island, which we go to collect clams, and we fight Fugles and crabs, and we fight Serpent Reavers on the island too. There's a handful of quests. It's actually, I kind of liked to do the Elbst quest first.
Yeah, same. Just get her done.
Yeah, get her done. It's right there. So there's no real travel time. You just click on the Elbst. You ride it out there in 2 seconds. And then if you're on Moonshade Island, you can knock out 2 to 4 quests all at once, depending on your RNG for the day.
Exactly. There's a lot of that. There's also, yeah, so you're getting like clam flesh, shark flesh. You're destroying ballistas.
I do like the Sahagin siege engines. They look very cool. The Whelk ballistas.
Yeah, those are great. I mean, the whole place looks awesome.
Yeah. They are essentially giant shells mounted on a wheeled trailer that is electrified, and they blast big lightning area of effect attacks. Anyway, yeah, so we do the daily quests. We get some food, we kill some coral tridents, and rank up to the next story quest.
So the coral tridents and their quote-unquote finless pets, the Serpent Reavers, are swarming another vessel off the coast of Western Lanosia. And, you know, attacks like these can't be allowed to persist. The Shorewalkers will certainly bring their armies down upon the Sahagin because they don't discriminate. So we're going to mount one of Paw's, P-A-H-H, Paw's Elbsts, and aboard the Swallow before the coral tridents perpetuate tragedy. We are ferried to the Swallow and speak with the captain, letting him know we're there to rescue them. So we're like, we sneak onto the ship while the ship is trying to be taken over by Sahagin. And we like, you know, tap, tap the captain like, hey, we're here to rescue you. And they were in the middle of abandoning ship. But if we could stall the tridents while they ready the lifeboats, that'd be great.
This is kind of dumb, in my opinion.
It's weird.
Because he's like, okay, thanks for showing up out of nowhere, Warrior of Light.
We were in the process of abandoning, like, and I guess you could help.
He asks us to help them evacuate by stalling the tridents, sure, but we can just fucking kill all of them. This is not a challenge. I'm doing this at the proper quest level, so is Jen. We're not like coming down here at level 90 and stopping shit. It's just not a challenge. There's no feeling that the ship is threatened. We can kill literally every Sahagin on the ship, no problem.
Yeah.
And we take it for this captain and he's busy bailing off his now like empty
ship. Yeah, I'd be like, hey, just hold on, bro. Give me like 5 minutes. I will take care of everything. You can keep your ship. You can keep your folks. You can keep your cargo. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Because I literally just like tap, 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 tap every single Sahagin on there and AoE them all to death. And it takes like 30 seconds.
Yeah. The mechanics do not match the story whatsoever here, besides the superficiality of it being on a ship.
Yeah.
Anyway, though, we kill the Sahagin, which gives the captain time to evacuate. And he does so. And he invites us to meet him back at the Aleport Tavern for a thank you drink.
Priorities.
Or to help drown his sorrows. Depending on your interpretation.
I think he's handling it pretty well. He tells us that he only just recently fitted the Swallow with lifeboats after he heard about the sinking of that civilian vessel. You know, that one. And he's like, You know, an honest merchant can barely sail the seas anymore. The Isahagen were bold enough.
They were bold enough to introduce themselves as they assaulted the vessel, saying that they were the Coral Tridents. So they said, what up, we're the Coral Tridents. We're here to pillage your vessel. Now yeah, we're going to pillage
you. They're making a show of it, which is also weird. And they're also singing the praises of their chief, a red-hued something something. And
this is also very dumb.
I mean, he's like, he is so chill about this whole thing. Well, he's just got like a beer and he's like,
this upcoming bit is really, what the fuck is going on here? This seems surreal. So he says that the Coral Tridents attacked a ship, said, hey, we're the Coral Tridents, and our leader is some sort of red-hued something.
We are the Doctors of Tridents.
And a Maelstrom officer, a Lalafell, overhears this conversation from a nearby table. Her name is Aruru Korgaruru, and she interjects, a red-hued sea devil? Does the captain recall what hue exactly they used to describe the leader?
Yes, was it crimson? Was it vermilion? Was it scarlet, perhaps?
And he says, no, it wasn't crimson or carmine. It was scarlet, I'm sure of it. Who the fuck cares? Like, what is going on here? Why do you care about this exact hue of red?
If it's the fucking brick sea devil, they're not going to be interested. But the scarlet sea devil, no, that's the guy.
They don't care about knockoff scarlet sea devils. They only want the genuine scarlet sea devil.
Any
of those imitators, they don't care.
He's like, do you recall the exact shade of red the Sahagin used to describe him? Was a scarlet, perhaps? And the captain was like, yeah. And the lieutenant is like, no way, that sucks. Oh, God. So apparently, 15 years ago, a Sahagin pirate of such cruelty and depravity plunged Western Lenosia into gibbering terror. Even the Knights of the Barracuda, or Barracuda, as Merlva pronounces it, were powerless against him. So the white coral necklace that he wore was perpetually stained with blood, earning him the name Scarlet Sea Devil.
You know, Jen, crimson is more often used to describe blood than scarlet. So I think that Crimson Sea Devil should have been the correct term.
I guess, but it's, you know, you want the partial alliteration, I guess. Crimson is the crimson. Oh, no, it was the Scarlet Pimpernel. You know, he gained some notoriety with that moniker. So why not the Sea Devil? Lieutenant Koguruu runs off to warn Commander Falkbreda. She's the commander who's posted at Camp Skull Valley. She's right next door to the nursery, so that's appropriate. So the captain offers a token of thanks, and one of the few things he was able to rescue from the hull was some oranges, you know, for the scurvies. So we take the oranges.
Yeah, we decide to give them to the spawnlings at Nov's nursery, and they are very skeptical about these fruits from our so-called trees.
This is...
You guys know what a tree is. Like, you can see them from the ocean.
Yeah, but they don't need oranges. So I don't remember the tree bit because that's eye rolling. But
oh, I made clear note of that.
So we like, yeah. So Nov is like, yay, you did it. You saved their lives. And that will spare them a lot of enmity with Maelstrom, with the Lilliminsons, etc. And he's like, what's this? I'm putting in our sack of oranges. And two spawnlings run over and they're curious about these oranges. Do they taste as good as cucumbers? One of them asks. And Nov gives them the sack and instructs them to share with their clutch mates. And thank the Shorewalker. Say thank you, Shorewalker. Okay, you may enjoy your oranges now. I hope they like them, honestly.
Now Nov asks us if we have offspring. Surely a warrior of our stature has received many eggs from our matriarch.
Dozens, yes, absolutely. Piles and piles and piles of offspring.
You don't really correct him so much as kind of brush the subject aside.
Expand on your thoughts there, Nov. You know, he's a proud papa, for sure. So Nov explains that the Tridents, they've risen in prominence because of their use of the Serpent Reavers, which is like cheating, for sure. And they have achieved some measure of militaristic success. You know, so basically just confirming that, like, we are doing the Lord's work, I guess, you know, so they're getting pretty good and we definitely need some help in trying to knock them down. Oh, also, new development. Apparently they have a new leader And this person is called the Scarlet Sea Devil. And Nav is, he's not destroyed by this news. He's more like, kind of like, oh, that's concerning. I did not expect the Sea Devil's return. That's the end of that.
Yep.
We leave him with that.
We're now on to more rank up quests. This is fairly disappointing. These quests are pretty much the same thing as the first run of quests. So we go ride the Elfstout some more and fight on different ships that are being attacked by the Sahagin, and we kill more Curl Tridents and destroy more of their supplies.
We have, well, we're also getting more kidnapped privates.
The only thing of interest here is that there's a quest where you have to save captured sailors who are being gassed by these jugs, and the gas is warping their minds. It's definitely incapacitating them, but also it seems to be twisting their mind as well, because they're murmuring about fish and stuff when you rescue them from these jugs.
Yeah, they're in the process of getting turned.
So it's interesting because this seems to imply that some of these Serpent Reavers are not actually tempered by Leviathan directly, but that they have been kind of mind controlled or brainwashed or whatever into becoming Sahagin thralls by another means.
This might be like step one of three, you know, that kind of a thing. You make them like pliable or.
I don't think that's the case, Jen, because
comatose.
Primals don't need people to be primed to temper them. It just happens. I mean, also, Leviathan summons are much more rare than the other primals because Leviathan's sightings have always been treated as like a big deal. It seems like he causes bigger disasters when he appears. So, I think it's more that this is kind of their stand-in for tempering to keep the supply of Serpent Reavers up, even when they are lacking the crystals to summon Leviathan. That's my take. It's not canon, just what I inferred from various...
I mean, that was kind of how it was expressed to us, too. Like, you need to save these guys before they get turned.
No other tribe is doing this, right? The Imalja, they just bring guys before Ifrit, and they get tempered. It's only the Sahagin that seem to have this other means of gaining tempered servants, or I guess tempered-like servants, of all the other tribes that we know of.
Because it seems like, well, out of all of them, the Sahagin definitely have more...
thralls.
Thank you. Like, they have a whole fucking army of them.
Yeah.
So that checks out. Lots of things that are spewing weird stuff out into the air.
That there are, Jen. Much like Jen.
Like the giant... Thank you. Like the giant barnacles. Those things are creepy as hell. Yeah, we've got to fight off, like, Big Mama Elpst. We have the healers. We got to just, you know, kill off their healers. So now we're going to hit the next story beat here. And we check in with Nav, and he asks a quote-unquote tedious favor of us. Like, why stop now?
Wow.
Which isn't fair.
It is fair.
Nav is a nice guy.
He is a nice guy, but
they're all tedious fucking favors.
Correct.
Especially like, go get us some clam flesh because we like clams. He needs to leave the nursery for a while, and he wants us to babysit. Straight up. Rather, but to act as a deterrent to potential Coral Trident acts of vengeance.
Yeah, we are more like the guardian of the clutch because he's going to be gone. He wants someone tough.
Yeah, we'll fight off some bitches.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. Sue.
Nah.
These names are annoying. Because we got Pa, we got Sue, we got, like, are we talking about the hillbillies or, like, what the fuck?
So
Sue wants to know.
He rolls up now and he's like, what's going on, Nav? And Nav says, mind your business.
Yep. He'll come back as soon as he can, but mind your business.
And then he heads out telling him that we're in charge. We are Fish Dad.
Yay. Sue is like, that's not cool. That's not on. I'm not okay with this lack of communication, this lack of transparency, because that means lack of trust. And that's not how we operate here in Nav's nursery. Sure, they're spawnlings, but they have taken their warrior's rights. Like, they can do stuff. Nav hasn't even shared stories of his past. And he's like, come to think of it, there is very little they know about the Clutch Father just at all. And so Sue, he's made a decision. Instead of a babysitter, we, the Warrior of Light, we're going to go be a spy.
this is a terrible idea for everyone involved. What the fuck would happen if we go do this random errand? This is like the child tricking the babysitter into doing.
Absolutely. Like, you know what? You know what would calm me down? A bunch of pizza. You should definitely go out and get us some pizza right now.
Because we are sent to leave the nursery, the thing that we're supposed to guard. If the fucking tridents rolled up and they all got killed and Nov comes back, like, what the fuck?
Like, literally, like, it's like a bunch of teenagers running around. That's what we're leaving.
And again,
and we're like, oh, okay, I'll do this instead.
Not just teenagers, but there is like a mortal threat to these guys here. It's not just like they might drink, you know, they might break in the liquor cabinet. If the coral tridents came while we were gone, how are we supposed to fucking like explain to Nov that we left right after he told us to watch them?
Correct.
His children.
But Sue did just say, like, Nov doesn't trust us to be like the warriors that we literally are. We've earned that shit. We can do stuff. I can see both sides.
But honestly, it's not our place to accept this responsibility and his trust and then to immediately shirk it because the trustees are saying, hey, we're tough enough to handle this, actually, so we don't need you anymore.
I guess we just decided that his argument was a sound one, because he's like, Nov would never leave unless it was something really, really dire.
We obviously really do, but I mean, if this were me, I would not walk away when I've been given this responsibility. That seems like a terrible idea and also a terrible, I guess, breach of trust, frankly. But we do, so it is what it is. So yeah, we're going to go and spy and ask around the area about Nov's past.
Well, there are older Spawn brothers, I guess.
Yeah.
That are kind of hanging out around Western Lenosia, kind of being hermits, being not fanatical, but they're definitely like old guard kind of.
Yeah, they're old men who are tired and their fighting days are
They've
over.
They've got
pretty
opinions
much.
About the youth.
We're given this clutch mark that essentially is a sign that we're associated with this clutch. So when us, a quote, shore walker goes up and talks to them, they're not going to flip out. They're going to be like, oh, I guess you're speaking on behalf of Nov's clutch.
They're still pretty cranky.
Yes, they are.
So
we get moving.
Yeah. The first of these, Silverfin Sahagin, that we find, lives on Moonshade Isle. And I'm like, we've been here a lot
this
recently.
This is really funny. He says, get the fuck off my island. And I'm like, I've been here every day.
100%. Like, I'm here all the time. Have you not seen me?
Yeah.
Why have we not had a confrontation before
now? I haven't seen you.
Where's your house, man? I don't believe you. Anyway, he wonders why we bear Nov's clutch mark. Has he thrown his lot in with the Finless Ones? Though it wouldn't matter. Nov's time ended long ago. He says that Zug is the champion of the Spawning Grounds now, and is the only warrior fit to claim the title of Scarlet Sea Devil. Okay.
You call him Zug?
Zug.
I would say Zug, because it's Z-U-G-G.
Yeah, but that sounds gross.
It sounds dumb, I agree,
Zug-a-lug.
But that's how it's spelled. Well, do Zug. It does sound cooler.
The other ones, there really isn't anywhere to go with the pronunciation, but this, I have a choice, and I'm making a choice.
Okay. This one says that no other warrior besides Zug is fit to claim the mantle of the Scarlet Sea Devil.
Apparently, mantle, this is something that is passed down.
Yeah, so mantle means that there can be more than one. This is a role or a title. It's not an identity that is fixed to one person.
So yeah,
that
it's the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we go talk to the next Silverfin. He's chilling in the Reef of Sending, and this is deep within the spawning grounds.
Yeah, it's by the big coral altar thing.
Yeah, so like he's hanging with, like he's mixing it up with the fanatics.
And there are aggro enemies right next to this guy.
Yeah.
So you've got to kill them before you can talk to them. If they spawn on you, then they interrupt your conversation.
And he's like, that's fine. I'll still have a conversation with you.
Yes, he is.
So we're in the Reef of Sending, and which is a very sacred place. This is essentially it's like a shrine to the fallen. And only the tridents of fallen Sahagin may pierce the reef here. There are a couple of Sahagin like kneeling, they're genuflecting in front of this altar of sorts. And this is where this Silverfin Sahagin drops the bomb. Nov used to be the undisputed leader of the Coral Tridents, a fierce warrior who thought of nothing but the glory and prosperity of his people. And we should go back and tell the Spawnlings this. They should be proud of their clutch father and his history. And, you know, fucking tell them. shout it from the rooftops, whatever. I'm like, ooh, this is, I don't know how that's going to go down. I'm like, okay, well, that's the end of that. The last Silverfin, he's found in Reaver's Hide. This is way the fuck up there. This is like a random ass, like, little dock in a random ass tiny little port way up by, like, the Aetherite. I didn't even know it was there. So he says, Nav, the reason why he's, like, on walkabout, he's here to parlay with Zug and in the Serpent's Tongue. Okay, great. So we've spied. We figured it out. We got intel. We're going to go back to the nursery and tell Sue everything that we heard. And Sue was like, oh, man, Clutchfather is walking into an ambush. It's just clear as fucking day. Is it, what's up? Is his brain mush? Like, what's the problem? But, you know, he went alone so that nobody else would be in danger from this whole thing. Like, he knows what's going to go down, but, and he's doing it alone because reasons. And
so Sue thinks he's planning to actually die there, having gone alone. Like, he's not bringing in an escort with them because he's going to go and face them down and get killed by himself or something.
Yeah.
So he asks us, Sue asks us to go and track down Nav, and we do. We head out to that little fort, the little stone fort, where the Serpent Reavers hang out. And we get there and we hide behind a boat on the beach like a fucking creeper. We crouch down and peep over this boat. It is not a good look for us, I gotta say.
It's like, it's not our place, man. We're hiding behind some, like a wreckage.
I think this
wreckage
plays out very awkwardly for us overall, frankly.
Oh, yeah. Like, embarrassing.
Yes.
He was never in any danger, but whatever. It kind of felt like that, though. I gotta be honest, like, look, I don't want this guy to die, but
I
still
agree,
it was just
I
like we were watching something we weren't supposed to watch.
That's correct. So we get there early, apparently, and we hide behind this boat and we spy in the whole scene ourselves. If we need to intervene, like, go and talk to him. He's on the way here. Say, hey, I'm here to back you up or whatever. Don't, like, spy in him and, like,
say
nothing.
It's so disrespectful.
It is. Everything here is a huge mess, I think, in terms of themes and in terms of, I guess, operation.
Yeah.
Whatever. We do that, though.
I mean, like, Sue, we have to assume that he knows his father. I think, like, Sue, I think, is the most senior of all the Spawnlings. Uh-huh. So he's got to know Nav way better than we do. So when he's like, please make sure that my Clutchfather doesn't die in a stupid fucking ambush he's walking directly into, I'd be like, right?
So we are here on the beach, creeping behind this boat. And then Nav rolls up. The chief here of the Coral Tridents appears now. This is a black and red scaled Tahagin who's wearing that big crab claw headpiece that we see during the Leviathan questline.
So this guy with the hat calls out Nav's naivete. Quote, your wits are as wilted as your fins, old one. And Nav responds, referring to Zug as young Zug. And Zug is like, how dare you? He is the Scarlet Sea Devil now, and he deserves respect. Nav is like, okay, I'm not here to trade insults. We need to discuss the future of our people because we are not long for this world. And Zug is angered by this, what he perceives as weakness. You know, he's like, he gets mad at him. Like, do you not remember who you were? The first Scarlet Sea Devil, the terror of the Indigo Deep. Of course, Nav remembers, but he has left that part of him behind, along with his heinous past. And that is why, says Zug, that legacy must live on through him. They will thrust their spears deep into this land and bathe in the blood of the Finless Ones. And Nav admonishes Zug with a warning. Your hubris will doom our spawnlings to lives of violence and misery. We need to work together on a diplomatic solution to coexistence. And this is the final straw for Zug.
I gotta say that Nav is a fucking nerd in this interaction.
Yeah.
He keeps using poems to make his point. Have you seen how our people fade into the darkness like the evening sun sinking beneath the ocean waves?
There's a lot of, like, flowery language like this.
From Nav.
Just in the game in general, you know?
Correct, but I'm saying, though, here in Nav
read the room.
Specifically
yeah, I
likes
mean,
to make these big, grandiose, poetic statements to this warmonger. I feel like, yeah, like you said, Jen, read the room is a good way to put it, because he's not communicating to his
He's not speaking opponent. His language.
Correct.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I appreciate it, Nov. I really do. You're trying to stir
and frankly,
the hearts and minds, but they just don't.
Zug
they're not doing
literally hard. Calls him out. Zug calls out Nov for using poetry to make his case. And I think it's deserved in this context.
So rude.
Anyway, though.
Young upstart fucking kid.
Zug accuses Nov of losing his way. He was the first Scarlet Sea Devil. What happened to you? It's beyond implied at this point in time. Nov was the first Scarlet Sea Devil before Zug took up this so-called mantle.
Yeah. Nov put it away and Zug was like, my turn.
But Nov says he tried to bury the title, bury his past. But Zug does not like this peacemongering. He says that he will carry on the Scarlet Sea Devil's name, waging war on the surface walkers and taking their land for spawning grounds. And now, finally, Nov gives up on the peaceful approach and he's ready to fight because he realizes what may have been apparent for some time, which is that Zug will not talk over this matter.
Well, he considers Nov a traitor.
Yeah.
So kill the traitor.
So Zug orders his minions to attack Nov. And so a handful of Sahagin and Serpent Reavers rush at Nov. But as his enemies approach, Nov starts to glow blue. They think he's hulking out or something as a good dozen or so guys go running away from Nov without a single thing happening.
I mean, this is kind of a moment I did not expect. I fully expected Nov to get like a beat down. You know, I fully expected we were going to have to run in and help a bitch out. But like, dudes start encroaching and he gives them a look and he just like starts like wah, 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 with this like blue green swirling shit around his body. Like, oh, okay. What is this? Like, literally, no, what is this? But yeah, it freaks everybody out except for Zug. Zug is like, you motherfuckers, you cowards. But then he's also like, all right, bye.
This also never gets explained.
It never gets explained.
This never comes up again.
Not even in the end.
No.
Like he doesn't need it because he's such a goddamn badass. But like, what is this? Is this like the power of Leviathan within him?
I don't think
what
he's tempered.
What is
in
this?
This quest somebody, chain is a fucking mess, kind of.
Somebody explain, because this is like, oh, this is rad. What is happening? This is super cool and interesting.
It's a
unexpected
a plot device. Come and gone with the current.
So
Jen.
So annoying. And then we're sitting there like a jackass behind this wreckage going like, oh, he's fine.
So Nov now tells Zug to go back to school. Go back to the shallows. You're not ready for the ocean deep. Burn or wet or something. I don't know. Whatever the Sahagin name for burn is.
Yeah.
Just happened there.
Yeah.
Nov turns and walks away, turning his back to Zug. And on his way out, now Nov notices us creeping in the shadows here, and he immediately guesses that Sue put us up to this. But this is a good thing, apparently. Sue has a warrior's instincts.
Yeah. Yeah, he sensed it was an ambush, and it was. So, you know, that's cool. But he's like, you know what? You know, fair, but I don't need the help. Obviously, you just saw. So anyway, we're back at the nursery now, and Nov is kind of unloading some stuff onto Sue now. So 15 years ago, yes, he was the dread Scarlet Sea Devil. He never once doubted in the piracy, the murder, the terror. All of this was in service of his people. It was zealotry, pure and simple. And because of his accomplishments as a warrior, the matriarch rewarded Nov with over 100 eggs. 100 eggs.
That's a lot of eggs, Jen.
But one day, he returned from looting a ship, and he was met with the nightmarish sight.
Jen, does it seem tiring to fertilize that many eggs? That's some work.
Maybe it's like a rain showerhead.
Great. Secrets of Sahagin anatomy uncovered here.
It's like a hose nozzle. I'm going to choose mist, flat spray, shower. Jet stream.
I'm assuming these are like fist sized eggs or something, given how big they grew up to be.
I wouldn't. No, I would say they were probably so much smaller than that. Like the size, like the size of like the tip of your thumb, maybe.
You think there are Sahagin tadpoles for a bit, Jen?
For sure. Yeah, but it's funny that they're bipedal and they're totally capable to like chill out on land like for a very long time. they seem less suited to life in the ocean just because of the way their bodies are, you know?
Fair.
But like, that's fine. It's fish. It's how fish reproduce, right? We've got like just piles and piles and piles of roe, and they just get coated.
You put them in like a kiddie pool, a tide pool, and then you fertilize the tide pool, and then they turn into tadpoles and they swim around for a bit and they grow legs and hop out.
Yep.
And then you get to teach in them.
Yep.
Cool. Sorry. Go on, Jen. The people wanted to know.
I'm glad we got that out of the way before we started talking about the child massacre that is occurring.
There's a lot of eggs, Jen.
Yeah.
It's so many eggs.
Yeah. You know, maybe not all at once. Maybe she's like, here's 20. And then a month later, here's 20 more.
I think,
you know,
maybe, but this came along in a pretty short time frame.
Well, also, they vary in age. You know, there's probably a couple of years between some. Like, there are some that are older, and there are some that are, like, there's like, what is the equivalent of maybe, like, a 12 or 13-year-old learning how to fish. And obviously, we've got, like, 16, 17-year-olds. The roughly equivalent, you know.
Because we're going to learn in a second that some of his young were spawned, some were still in egg form.
Right.
So, yeah, you're correct. They did come over time. They're not like, here, have 100 eggs.
So, anyway, so the thing that kind of turned Nav completely around was one day when he returned from looting a ship, and he was met with the sight of almost all of his children. Nav comes back and finds all of his children dead. They've been slaughtered. And he knew that the Shorewalkers had followed him home, seeking vengeance, and massacred his kids.
Because we had a digression. Again, this was during the days of Nav being the Scarlet Sea Devil.
Yeah.
And wreaking terror across the coast. So he ambushed some village, probably.
Yeah.
Went back home, yeah. And then he got followed back by.
That's why he understands now, like, how this back and forth is just, there's nothing productive about it.
These guys, they waited until Nav was gone, until he left the nursery, and then they killed all of his young, all of his spawnlings. So Nav comes back, and he finds out that every single one of his young is dead at the hands of these Shorewalkers. But he realized, though, that they were not to blame for this violence themselves. They were just perpetuating the cycle of violence that he himself was feeding with his actions.
I mean, this is so fucking unbelievable. Like, that this didn't further radicalize him is unbelievable to me, you know, in the real world we inhabit. But that's fine. You know, he's a bigger person. So yeah, he had to take responsibility for that. Like, he's part of the cycle. He's half of this whole operation. And he decided, that's it. No more. Like, we are hurtling towards oblivion with this. With attacking ships, killing Lemensons, you know, trying to take land by force, to insinuate themselves violently. That's it. They're just all gonna die. They are no match. So anyway, he hangs up his hat. No more Scarlet Sea Devil hat.
There were a few unhatched eggs that still survived the massacre, and he gathered them and focused on raising them. This is his clutch now.
Yeah.
This is Sue.
This is Sue and his spawn brothers.
Yeah.
That's the jam.
So now Nav commits that together, they will topple the coral tridents. Me and him. We're going to do it. Again, cycle of violence, but moving on.
We'll figure out a strategy. Sure.
So that is it for that quest step. Now some more reputations.
Yep. So now we get some quests from Sue.
Yeah, this is the exact same thing once more. We burn other crates. We go to other boats that are being attacked. We are freeing other captives. It's the exact same steps.
Same stuff.
three times over.
They're not even really like an escalation, except there's one in particular where you have to kill like a billion dudes in the Serpent's Tongue. Like, kill a bunch of these guys, one of them, so one of these guys spawns, and kill a bunch of these guys, so one of these spawns, and then kill a bunch of these guys, so one of these spawns. And I'm like, this is, it's just busy work, man. We're killing so many people. They're thralls, to be fair, but still.
Some of them are thralls, some are actual Sahagin. There's a quest where we have to kill Sahagin to make the Sahagin chief spawn.
Oh, yeah.
And kill them. Yeah. So a lot of killing going on.
A lot.
Cycle of violence.
Like, I'm surprised the Coral Tridents don't just, like, walk through their little gate and murder them all. Like, I don't know. Or they're like, you know, a Sahagin.
I've already said it, but it's a quest that's out of touch with its own message. This is one of the bloodiest of the tribe quests in the game, I think. In terms of how many quests involve killing in large numbers, really tone deaf to itself.
Desperate times.
I'm like, that is not his message, Jen.
Yep. Nope.
Anyway, we do all those things and we get to the final rank now. We return to Nov. He tells us that Zug has lost any remaining restraint after being humiliated back at the Serpent's Tongue, and the Coral Tridents have now attacked a Maelstrom vessel and captured a high-ranking Limpson official. And Nov is afraid that this will cause a serious escalation by the Maelstrom, and he urges us to intervene with them to try to head off a full-on war between them and the Sahagin over this brazen attack. We head over to Falkbrida at Camp Skull Valley to see what we can do, and she tells us that, yes, the Maelstrom is mobilizing for the Scarlet Sea Devil, has assaulted a warship, inflicted heavy casualties, and they captured their Counselor of Coin. So they have now captured a Limpson leader person. I mean, the Counselor of Coin feels like...
He's the comptroller.
Not the most exciting of captives, maybe, but...
Yeah.
Apparently, he and Admiral Meryl Vib are close, so there you have it.
Yeah, there are, I guess, stakes. I guess.
And she says that charts will have to be redrawn after their cannons are done bombing the shore. So this is going to be a serious attack. Bad news for Nov.
And we're all like, yeah, but, you know, what if you did it without violence? Let's hear me out. We could do a talk situation instead. And she's like, no. The Admiral... She's already instructed her troops to prepare for a full-scale retaliation. And Falkbrida is like, you know, brute force is the only thing these people understand. Fishback, she says. So we go back to Nov and tell him, and he's like, well, of course. So, kind of like the only thing we can do at this point is to rescue the Counselor ourselves. And to do that, we need to figure out where he's being held. And it's apparently, Nov seems to think that all of these plans have been written down somewhere.
It's for the Serpent Reavers, I think, is kind of how it's framed. And that there are so many involved in this attack on this Limpson warship that there must be written plans to pass the word on.
Sure, something was coordinated here. Which, I mean, like, well done for having a plan. So we have to sneak into the Serpent's Tongue to find it. It was super fucking easy, and we take it back. And it's all right there in black and white, or black and tan, whatever.
Part one, attack the ship. Part two, attack the counselor. Part three, keep him on the ship called the Lost Duchess.
So this is a Reaver ship, and we are going to take one of Pa's Elpsts, and Nov is going to follow behind. So, it begins.
Well, Jen,
the cutscene.
Good thing we practice our stealth skills beforehand on the beach, because we do a lot more creeping here.
We're like a ship in the night.
This is kind of cool, actually. This is a full-on cutscene, no player input whatsoever. But we see our character ride out to this vessel on the Elbst, and then we climb up on, it's like a little ledge along the mid-height of the ship.
Yeah.
And we're creeping along there with our back against the hull. There are guys above decks. We sneak around. We climb onto the deck itself. We duck around rigging and cannons, and finally we get eyes on the counselor. So, should have been a ninja for this cutscene.
I was.
Well, good for you, Jen. I was not.
And also, you know, if you're going to sneak onto a ship and skulk around, be a Lalafell. Real hard to see.
Good advice.
So, after all the sneaking, we find him. We find Counselor Thurston.
He is wearing a high-collared red and black jacket, is rocking a well-kept mustache, wearing a monocle, and has well-styled salt and pepper hair.
He looks like a guard for the Queen of Hearts in Disney's Alice in Wonderland. He's got a...
harsh, I think.
It's a look. He is in irons, and he's sitting on the floor, or on the deck, and he hits his captors with an unfortunate... Do you know who I am? And it's unfortunate on two levels. One, don't be that guy. Two, of course they fucking know who you are. That's why you're here.
But
this is one of the Admiral's most trusted advisors?
They really get into it. He and the Sahagin start trading insults back and forth, and
they are getting fed up with his shit. How dare you shut your mouth? Like, I'm the comptroller. So yeah, the embarrassment continues, you know. You think me cowed by simple threats? We Lamincens will not be intimidated by your base savagery. Like, just fucking douchey as shit. Luckily, Nav arrives and everybody shuts up.
We hear a splash and flying out of the water onto the deck is Nav.
I like this, the music that they play here. It's definitely overdone, but I don't know. It's just like, wah, here he comes to beat your asses.
He does beat their asses. The Sahagin and Reavers on board prepare to react, but Nav dives into the lot of them and cuts them all down.
He doesn't need the glowing stuff. He just mows them down.
Yep.
12 to 1.
No more glows.
No problem. Yeah.
Cuts them all down. No problem. Thurston is confused. He thinks he's being rescued. Then he realizes that his so-called savior is a Sahagin. And so now he's just like, what's going on here? We got Sahagin fighting Sahagin.
Yeah. Nav is like, all right, hey, Warrior of Light. Okay. I'm going to guard the counselor. And you will violently emancipate the key to his shackles from the remaining rabble. And Thurston is like, am I just going to be traded from one captor to another? Like, he doesn't know what's going
on. Everyone ignores him. Yeah. No one explains shit to him.
So we kill all the other dudes, we get the key and free him. And suddenly he's like, not a douche anymore. So he refers to Nav as this scaled gentleman. And we, Warrior of Light, currently labeled as quote-unquote some sort of sellsword, we confirm the scale gentleman is our friend. So now, Zug and a couple of his little lackeys, they board the ship and confront Nav, and like, here we go, boss fight. Same argument. Don't you know you're putting the entire tribe at risk of annihilation? Yeah, whatever. Come at me, bro. You did way worse back in the day. Blah, blah. Let's fight.
There is a pretty intense brief skirmish until the two of them square off samurai style. I guarantee there's a term for this, like samurai dash by, where one falls over afterwards and bleeds a bunch. But they do that.
Oh, it's such a trope. But it's kind of cool.
Kind of cool. They had the wrong weapons for it. One's got a trident, but
didn't kill Bill.
It, whatever. Either way, they do it. So they dash by each other. Nothing happens. And suddenly...
You're wondering which one will fall.
It's Zug. Zug falls.
Yes.
But Nav says he's only wounded. He's not dead. I gave him a light wound.
No, like, he'll have a hell of a scar. Yeah. Good lesson. So Nav... Not Nav. Zug is...
Jen, is he wounded or injured?
You know what? I'm going to say wounded on this one.
Okay.
Yeah. So Zug is, he's laid low. He's struggling on the decks. He's trying to catch his breath and he tells Nav to finish it. Kill me. And Nav refuses. Show me a parent who can kill his own child. Ah, there it is. So, I mean, the revelation that Zug is one of Nav's kids isn't necessarily a surprise. I mean, a single clutch father can sire hundreds of spawnlings. Obvs. But Zug was the singular hatchling survivor from the massacre. He was the only non-egg. He was the actual, like an actual viable. So somehow he escaped. And so he witnessed all of his spawn brothers being killed, and that radicalized him. And so he went the opposite direction of his dad. And he made a promise to his Spawn brothers and to his people that he would, you know, what's the word?
Avenge?
Yes. Thank you. Like, what's the vengeance one?
Yeah. He made a promise to avenge the deaths of his brethren.
Yeah. So, you know, what we totally assumed Nov would do, given the circumstances, that was Zug. So they both went their separate ways in that moment. He swore that he would be the Scarlet Sea Devil that his father wouldn't be.
Nov says that you cannot protect your loved ones with a name. That is what he learned from that slaughter. He begs Zug to spare himself that pain, to be the future that their people need.
Zug just takes a second and then tells his bros to weigh anchor and head to port.
To bear their guest ashore. So we are also taken to shore. Back at Aelport, we've been dropped off by the Sahagin along with Tirsten, and he thanks us again for our intervention and says that he now realizes that the so-called fishbacks are far more complicated than rumors suggest.
He has some delightfully privileged insights about his ordeal, but you know, it's progress.
He wants to rush home to his own children, but he will first contact the Admiral and try to head off this attack. But first, he gives us a gull feather trinket.
A seagull feather, a gull feather.
He says that gulls are a good luck sign to sailors, often signaling the presence of land, and that this trinket would be something that a sailor would make at sea and then pass on to their children back at home, and he wants us to give Nov this gift. And he hopes that they can find a common ground in the future. We hop on over to the nursery and pass on this gift to Nov. Nov tells us that Zug has indeed disbanded the Coral Tridents and that he's going to be traveling for a time. Zug's going to go find himself again after this whole ordeal. Nov says, of all his offspring, Zug is most like me, determined and stubborn. And he doesn't yet want to return to the nursery, to return to his past, to his father. But Nov is sure that eventually Zug will return. Nov hopes that he'll be stronger and wiser when he does. But we hand over the gull feather now, and Nov recognizes the gift for what it is and tells us that though he still feels rage for his slain children, it pales in comparison to his desire to protect his surviving spawnlings. And he hopes that the gull feather will one day represent the birth of understanding between our two peoples. As for us, the Warrior of Light, we have done far more for Nov's cause than he's ever hoped. Should we choose to return, we will always be welcome. To him, we are Clutchmate.
Aw, that's so nice.
We return to Rashat Riki now at Maelstrom Command.
Months later, yeah.
And tell her that we saved the counselor. She says, thank you for that. And hopefully one day, with the work that we've done, there can be peaceful coexistence with the Sahagin. But for now, we deserve a rest.
And a bath.
And a bath. We have the slight scent of rotting crab meat. The end.
That's a delicacy, bitch.
Wow. So, Jen, we already talked about the thematic conflicts in the quest. Don't need to rehash that shit there. It's a problem, in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah.
To me, though, the damning thing about this, and maybe more so for it being a game, is how boring this quest is.
You know, you assume that if you have to be a disciple of war or magic to engage in these quests, it's because there's going to be, like, action and fighting and stuff. I mean, there were a couple of fates that you had to do in order to get stuff. Like, there were two fates. So that's something.
Well, we are doing fighting, Jen. That's not the issue.
Yeah, but it's not really.
I don't think that, like, the violence, and there's plenty of it, is the problem.
Yeah,
it
there's,
is
the there's a lack of
interest, is what I'd say.
Variety.
Just anything, frankly. And I think none of the characters here are especially all that good. I don't think they know how to really write Sahagin here, because everyone just acts really stiff. There's no real personality or real signs of a different culture. They're just not human, so they act really uptight.
Yeah, we felt a lot more, I think, depth of culture with the kobolds.
Yes, for sure.
There was, I mean, you have like tribes within tribes. You have a lot of interpersonal conflicts. You have romantic entanglements. You have like personalities. And here, there's not a lot of distinction.
It's just kind of like a bland fantasy ass warrior culture type thing.
Yeah.
Me strong, me get more eggs.
The interest was in the environment.
Yes, but you don't have to do the tribe quest to appreciate that.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, I agree. The spawning grounds look fantastic. No question whatsoever. All the characters feel kind of the same.
Yep.
Sure, one likes violence, one hates violence, whatever, but they don't really act that differently, though, besides talking about different values.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and with the kobolds, I mean, the Amalja, kind of the same, you know, kind of homogenous sort of personalities.
I think that for the Amalja, I forget her name, but the cat girl, Amalja. She was a very good character because
she was a total protagonist.
She was a pain in the ass, but also she was very well characterized.
That was interesting. Like, and also, what's going on with her?
The Amalja Elder, too. I don't know how good he was as a character, but he definitely was distinct.
Yeah, because we had that whole, like, we expected him to behave one way, and at the end there was a bit of the twist there, which was cool.
He's definitely got a personality to him. The quality of him as a character is debatable, not on the table right now, not the current topic. But either way, though, he definitely had his own identity.
There was some, the tier two quests, there was a little bit of something there in the dialogue that you got when you turn in the quests, where he was like, he had assumptions about Shorewalkers. He was very much like, I don't know about you people. I don't know. You seem like shit. But sometimes you're kind of good.
That was one of the spawnlings, though, not Nov, right?
Correct. Yeah. The second tier quest giver. I don't remember his name.
Same. Pshu.
There was a something like that. So there was like a little something there to distinguish him from somebody else. Like, you know, where he was like, you know, yeah, Nov kind of like brought you in here and I don't think I like that, but you seem okay. I don't know. That's about as good as it got.
Besides the character issues here, I think that it's also lacking any real action, like you were saying, Jen.
Yeah, like even the stuff, like, again, I'm going back to the kobolds, where we have to like interrupt some of the guys in the mines, and they like, it's kind of, it's like the same shit. Like, we go up to a dude, we instigate a fight, we fight them. But it felt like, I don't know if it was like the claustrophobia of the environment. So it felt a little bit more like something versus just going around and killing like random Sahagin.
Are you talking about the part where you sneak into the laboratory and blow up the furnace, Jin?
It was in that kind of, I think that tier of quests. Yeah. So we're like, you actually had to walk up, and I think it was like a bunch of alchemists that were in there, and one of them in particular had a line of dialogue that was like, oh my God, I like, this is not what I wanted. I don't want to die. I don't want to fight you, but you fight him anyway. At least like that, there was like this, I don't know why, but it felt like you were like, at least mechanically doing something. There was like sabotage, though you did it over and over again. I don't know why that felt different. It's because it's not really, because you go in and you plug up the pesky barnacles over and over and over again. You light a bunch of crates of weapons on fire over and over and over again. You light some battle standards on fire over and over and over again.
I don't even feel like there's any stakes to this thing, honestly. There's no real overarching threat, so much as like Coral Trident's bad in general until the very end, when it's like, oh shit, they're gonna blow all of these Sahagin up, and then it's over in 5 minutes from that point. I couldn't tell you what's at stake before then, though, besides the overall kind of aspiration to do better, but we don't actually work towards any sort of human Sahagin relationships.
No.
Period there. We're just killing guys.
Yeah.
I think that we might care more if the characters were more likable and we felt invested in their outcomes, but
yeah, like I felt a kinship of sorts to the kobolds. I'm like, you know, the overall goal wasn't like, so the Sahagin stuff, this is big time. This is a huge issue. This is literally trying to like find a way to negotiate coexistence with the Thalassocracy. Thalassocracy. It's such a crazy word. It's a cool word. Whereas with the kobolds, they were just like intertribal drama. you know, this is not, there weren't really any big stakes. This is all just like their own little shit.
Yep.
So we were just like, this tribe of 10 lazy assholes, for some reason, we really like them. And we want to see them get ahead in Kobold land. Also, the leader of the other kobolds, he sucks. And we're gonna, like he was a villain of villains. Like, he was clearly, like, a dick. And you had to hate him. It was great.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Zug, he's just like, oh, okay. He wants to kill all humans. Yawn. Like, you know, there's no complexity. At the very end, obviously, we're like, you know, there's a potential redemption arc going on there, but it didn't take much.
It didn't take much. It also felt like, I don't know, not earned either. And I think it's for me at that point in time, I was not at all invested in any of the characters, so I didn't really care that much about how that unfolded. It just doesn't hit me, or apparently hit you, Jen, in a way that triggers emotions.
Like, couldn't have there been a quest where we do something fun with, like, a bunch of the little hatchlings, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we teach them how to play soccer, or, like, I don't know. So that there's a connection, like, we can see what the stakes are for Nom.
Yes.
It's not just, like, a group of fish guys that are all the same, you know, to see exactly what it is he's fighting for. That would be really cool. Or if there were, like, an illustrated, like, the sepia tone snapshot flashbacks we sometimes get of maybe, like, the Scarlet Sea Devil back in the day, you know, standing on a pile of Maelstrom bodies or whatever.
Yeah.
To basically give us a little something to sink our teeth into.
Yeah, I mean, that could help as well. There's nothing that's really offensive about it. It's not bad per se, just,
that's the problem.
Unremarkable.
Yeah. Give us something. Give us like an absolute jackass. Like, give us somebody we love to hate.
Do you have any other thoughts to offer on the subject, Jen, before we retire?
No.
Cool. All right, well, Jen, thank you for joining me on this Sahagin adventure. We have one more tribe quest to go.
Yep.
Jen hates doing these, by the way. We all should thank Jen for her efforts in this, because...
Oh my God, no. I'm such a whiny child. No, don't do that.
Thank you, Jen.
I'm finally getting all of these mounts, you know? So that's cool.
You can say what you want, Jen, but also, this is a lot of steps in game that are not interesting. For any tribe quest, I'm not talking about the story beats. I'm talking about the grindy wrap-up quests. The Realm Reborn ones especially, this is a lot of work to advance. For a personality type like me, I can, you know, buckle down and do it. I don't have fun doing the rep quests, but I'm not that put off by them either. I'm like, sure, I'll do this thing. It is in service of a bigger goal, so I'll do it. Done. So thank you again, Jen. I know this is more friction for you than for me, and I appreciate it, and we all should appreciate Jen in general.
Oh my God.
Well, thanking Jen aside, next time we are resuming the main story quest. We'll be kicking off the patch 2.3 MSQ.
Finally. And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you all so much for listening and being you and listening. Being you. One of these days, I'll figure out how to do that, how to say stuff. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can. If you have any commentary on my outros, you can send that to podreturnffxiv@gmail.com. Or you can check the show notes for our Discord and join up. That's where you would join us for group runs. You can also share your glams, talk about the game, talk about literally whatever you want. It's a really excellent group of people, so show up and say hi. And we also have the Patreon at patreon.com/podreturnffxiv, where for $1 a month, you'll get access to some bonus content we release. Every so often, we do all of the seasonal events. We have our Final Fantasy XI series, Vanadiel, Vansplainer, that is published there. So check it out. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.